5 years ago today, then-Governor Peter Shumlin dedicated his entire State of the State speech to the issue of addiction in Vermont. This week, we're reflecting on what's become known as the opioid crisis in the years since. Yesterday, we heard from Governor Shumlin. Today, we're hearing from a Vermonter who's experienced addiction.
I'm Scott Pavick. I'm a Berlin-Todian working at UVM, and I've been in recovery from opioid use disorder for coming up on 6 years now.
Pavek is 27. In the last few years, he's become a vocal advocate around addiction, especially on social media. Back when he was 16 and a high school student in Barrie, he was introduced to opioid painkillers by a friend.
It was a matter of taking that pill that first day and coming back to the residence that night to acquire more. It was a pretty instantaneous connection between me and opioids.
Pavek says after high school, he wound up in Arizona working as a dishwasher and using opioids.
All the time I wasn't in the dish pit, I was out on the street doing what else was necessary to keep drugs in my system and on occasion food in my body. And so that decline ultimately left me completely isolated, alone, doing things that I couldn't have fathomed doing when I was a kid, and just watching my health decline until I was ready to die.
But here you are. What led you to stop using?
I ultimately did three stints in inpatient treatment. I was granted the opportunity to attend some really fantastic inpatient facilities, not on my dime.
His aunt offered to pay for him to go into treatment in December of 2012. She and Pavek's mother showed up at the Arizona restaurant where he worked.
And they said, Scott, we've got you lined up for treatment in Virginia. You can go. We'll get you the best resources. You'll see your friends again. You'll talk to your family again. We'll even let you go to college. I heard that offer. I said, can I think about it? I was so underweight and so desperate and so sick. And the offer of treatment of this incredible opportunity scared me. It scared me so much. And the restaurant owner, the GM, Jordy, I asked her if we could go talk about it in her office, if we could work it through. And I said, Jordy, you know, I thought I'd been doing well. I thought I'd been doing the right things. I thought I'd been getting better. What should I do? She told me if I decided to go to treatment, she'd be waiting for me when I got out, that I could move on from dishes to be a waiter, and that they would support me, and that they knew I was doing the right thing. It's absurd, but I needed to hear that. If not, I would have just stayed washing dishes, and I was really ready to tell my mom to go home.
Back in Vermont, Pavek says recovery was often lonely and isolating. But in recent years, he's become increasingly visible in Vermont's social media circles. He tweets frequently about addiction, recovery, and policy. So I asked him what he thinks government should do to provide pathways to recovery for those dealing with addiction.
There's no one way to get into recovery, but we know that there's a few prerequisites, the first of which being you have to be alive. So when we talk about getting people into recovery, I think the one basic thing we can do is keep people alive. If we do more to open up pathways of harm reduction, we give people another chance of living another day while in active addiction and getting another opportunity down the road to enter treatment and then maybe another opportunity to enter recovery. I know that I was dangerously close to turning down the opportunities for treatment, which ultimately led to the recovery I enjoy now.
So what does that look like? What are some of the policies that you think need to be in place to keep people alive?
I think right now we've got a small window of opportunity to flood the state with drug checking supplies like fentanyl test strips that will still have some utility. That utility might be gone in 2020 if the drug poisoning crisis continues unabated. In addition to that, we have more radical ideas, things like overdose prevention sites and prescription heroin. When we think about addressing an overdose crisis that is driven by drug poisoning, prescription heroin makes sense and would keep people alive. If that doesn't seem politically feasible, I would encourage people to consider the perhaps less radical idea of simply saying, you don't need to use a loan when you feel compelled. How about you come to an overdose prevention site?
Is this what is also sometimes referred to as a safe injection site?
Sure. It could be referred to as a safe injection site. I say overdose prevention site because I like the consequentialist frame. And plus, it's not entirely accurate because we have plenty of unsafe injection sites all over Vermont.
Well, let's talk a little more about Vermont. In 2014, January 2014, Governor Peter Shumlin dedicates his entire State of the State speech to the issue of addiction. In the last 5 years, how would you grade what the state of Vermont has done to try to address the issue of addiction?
Maybe a C, a solid C. We know that by some metrics, we're doing better in some senses. Waitlist treatment times are down or non-existent in some areas. Now, I know in some areas we're absolutely failing. Opioid-related fatalities increased last year. Drug-related deaths were down, but we're certainly not making progress in the sense that we want a precipitous drop in deaths at this point.
So I spoke to former Governor Shumlin the other day, and one point that he made repeatedly was he essentially said there's a very simple way to solve this crisis, and that is to for the FDA to severely limit who can get OxyContin. He thinks that is a primary cure to the opioid crisis. I'm curious what you would say to that.
So when we think about restricting access to prescription medications, that's a good idea if prescription medications are driving overdose or being prescribed too liberally. If anything, we now know that the pendulum has swung the other way. And as opposed to flooding the streets with opioids, as Purdue was doing just 10 years ago, we now see chronic pain patients frequently committing suicide because they no longer have access to the pain medications they need. What's the other consequence of unnecessary or undue restrictions is that you are leading people to other substances to manage their pain. Now, when we think about restricting access to cleaner, safer substances, we know what the consequences are going to be, and in light of a broader fentanyl crisis since that speech was made, it just doesn't make sense. It's nice in theory, but it certainly shouldn't be a focus, and to say it would be anywhere near a silver bullet is so far off the mark.
Do you think there's been any improvement in the last 5 years in the public perception of addiction as a medical issue rather than a moral failing?
Yeah. And I don't have anything to point to directly there. It's more of a feeling. But in the focus on stigmatizing language or how we're talking about people in substance use disorder, that's definitely a change I've seen the past 5 years, where previously in treatment, you know, I met people who described themselves as junkies and treatment providers who described people, maybe tongue-in-cheek, as junkies. And understanding just how damaging even a small word like that can be to someone's identity and sense of self-efficacy, that's a big change we made in the past 5 years that I think is underemphasized. We need to understand just how important and powerful our words are.
That's Scott Pavek. Tomorrow, our series continues with another perspective from a person in recovery, Wayne Miller. He now works in a peer-based recovery center in the Upper Valley. For VPR News, I'm Henry Epp.